And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you to football is essentially here, Luke, because tomorrow I get on a plane and I head to Indianapolis for Big Ten Media Days. There's actual, hopefully legitimate football to be talking about very, very near here in the future. But how are things with you, Luke?
I mean, I think they're okay. I haven't slept a lot. I've had human number two.
Congratulations,
and by I have not had it. My wife had it, and she was a rock star. So we have two children, both of them under the age of three, both boys. So we got our hands full, and we're looking forward to it.
So for folks wondering why there wasn't an episode last week, it's because Luke was busy doing normal, human things, and having a child is more important than recording a random podcast, and we're very happy for it. Now we just got to get you to actually pull the trigger on that house, Luke, so you can become Roseville North instead of Roseville West.
Oh, man.
Come on now. I mean, you can put an ad out here on the podcast saying if anybody wants it to buy a house in Roseville, that's a pretty nice house, I'd say. But again, I mean, it's your life here.
Yeah, we'll see. Okay, and then we should probably just touch on real quick. Obviously, we missed the episode. This is a defensive-focused episode. We'll touch on some other things as well, but let's. I do want to touch on you getting out to Big Ten Media Day and those sorts of things just real quick before we get into this. I'm trying to remember last year, because now as we see the pandemic surging somewhat on the West Coast and elsewhere, didn't they have Big Ten Media Day? Didn't they start fall camp and then they shut it down last year? Does his memory serve me correctly?
I don't believe there was Big Ten Media Days last year.
Oh, and so they shut it down well in advance then. Okay.
Yeah, and then they had 2 days into fall camp, and then they canceled the season and put it back on. It's interesting because, I'll be at Big Ten Media Days tomorrow. We're going to get some we're going to be heading to, I think it's St. Elmo's for you Parks and Rec people out there. My man Ron Swanson's favorite joint there in Indiana, with Justin Gard and I think Mike Grimm. But it's interesting because, I look at the policies – or is this going to be at Lucas Oil Stadium? So
sure.
I got the COVID guidelines for what's to be expected. And I'm pretty sure you don't have to wear a mask, which is interesting. No, I'm vaccinated, you're vaccinated. I mean, what's the risk for people like us?
Right.
But I do think it's awfully interesting. We'll see how it kind of goes. But again, I'm excited to be there to talk to Fleck about what he thinks realistic expectations are going to be for this team. Then we also get Tanner Morgan, of which, I don't know if you saw this, but Morgan, his dad, Ted, he did pass away, unfortunately, after a long bout with, I believe, a brain tumor. And I got to know Ted incredibly, incredibly well over, I'd say, the last 18 months. And it's tough because he was about as good of a human being as you could possibly have. He was incredibly genuine. He wore his emotions on his sleeve. I mean, he loved Tanner and Pat, his wife, and all of his kids so much. And, they thought he beat it. And then, unfortunately, he came back. And so mm-hmm. that sucks. And, I just would ask that she could send some positive thoughts to Tanner and his mom, Pat, as best you can, because, Ted was a listener. Ted, I'm going to miss getting phone calls from Ted Morgan. And then 75 minutes later, it's what in the world just happened? But that was Ted. And
I'm gonna miss the Ted Morgan listened to the podcast, had some thoughts.
I get them secondhand. Before every game, after every game, I'd either get a phone call or a text from Ted and we talk. And, again, I'm going to miss Ted. And, It was a tough night when I heard that it didn't go well. So, it's going to be interesting because even, everybody's human. And Tanner Morgan just lost his dad last week. Now he's going to be at Big Ten Media Days.
Right.
And he's got to play in a game in 44 days against Ohio State. And it's just I don't know what to expect from, again, we're talking about a kid in college who just lost his dad, who was his biggest fan ever and was there and at all times. And, so Tanner will be there, Mo for Heisman, Mr. Mo Ibrahim will be there. And then Boye Mafe, someone that I don't think I've ever seen get media availability. Minnesota's best defensive player in my mind, probably. He'll be there as well. So I'm going to be interested to talk to each one of them. And we'll have plenty of content coming on Gopher Illustrated, of which, by the way, Luke, not going to lie to the people, during Big Ten Media Days here, Wednesday and Thursday, probably when you're listening to this, we're going to be running a 50% off sale. So if you want to get behind the paywall, you want to read the gift rewinds, you want to have all the access in the world you can to me and Ryan James, and basketball recruiting is awfully interesting right now. Just from, you know, they're on the road, Ben Johnson and staff, and I even confirmed today they're going to be having the barbecue back on July 31st when the dead period ends for a few days. Nice. And there's going to be a couple of offered 23s there. So we'll have a 50% off sale then. And Luke, I have one further thing before we kind of get into the defense. Can I complain about the price of AA lithium batteries, please? So for those of you who have been living under a rock and listening to this podcast, I'm a big deer hunter and I have an unhealthy obsession with trail cameras. I think I did inventory. I think I have 25 trail cameras out. Now, is that excessive? Absolutely. Do I know I have a problem? Yes. The first step is admitting it. But I also know that I don't get a lot of time in the fall because I obviously have a job that is on nights and weekends. And I want to make sure that the time I do get out in the tree stand is I have the most recent information available to me. So I even have cell cams out there. So bottom line, Luke, I bought like 240 lithium AA batteries because lithium is the only way to go.
Did you buy it rechargeable or not?
No, rechargeable batteries and trail cameras, no bueno.
Okay.
Not good. They don't do well in the cold. So like I know we're in the forever 90 degree stretch of weather now that never seems to end. And I can't stand it because I wish it was 40 degrees or 50 degrees year round. So I could just open the windows. But lithium batteries, man, are expensive. They're like one, say like one, I bought them off Amazon because I don't know where else I can say like, yo, I need 240 lithium AA batteries. You got them in stock?
I'm going to help you with this, actually. You know that my background.
Oh, what do you got for me?
My background is in electrical engineering, right? Have you heard of...
If you got more affordable lithium batteries for me, I am all ears.
Well, you're buying at pretty high volume. So you should check out like digikey.com.
Never heard of it.
Yep. They're in Thief River Falls. They're a $1 billion company. They do fairly low volume electronics sales.
Holy cow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
They're a $1 billion company.
Yeah. Well, when I buy batteries next year, because hopefully I never have to buy a AA battery here again in 2021.
You should, and you really should pay attention like throughout the year because you might be able to buy them at a dip.
In what scenario do lithium batteries go on sale?
Do you know who you're competing against for lithium right now?
Well, I get mine from Energizer. I have no idea who else makes and manufactures.
So this is a finite material. Are you familiar with the idea of electric cars?
I've heard of them before.
Have you heard that almost every major manufacturer is making a push towards electric cars?
I have heard that before, yeah.
Do you know what powers almost all cell phones? Actually, all cell phones.
Is it lithium batteries?
Almost everything is powered by lithium batteries right now.
Well, good. It's probably why my battery life on these phones are so good now.
But, yeah, so...
Okay.
We'll take this off. We'll take this offline. I appreciate your disdain. I agree with you on the heat. I am terrified for what it might mean for football in, you know, say, August. Like, are we going to have a 100-degree football game? That's going to blow.
I would bet, but I mean, I would hope this heat would break eventually. But again, it's 44 days until Ohio State, which is crazy to me already. Now that we're only 44 days away from, I mean, it's going to be, as far as I know, it's 100% capacity. It's going to be absolutely packed there. You know, there will be Ohio State fans there certainly because they didn't get to really attend any games last year. But I think as more and more publications have come out with their predictions for Gopher football, and I think we'll get into this next week when Daniel House comes on the podcast.
Woot.
Mr. Gopher's guru himself. I've seen Daniel too many things to know that him and I have differing opinions, and people like when they have differing opinions and they discuss why they think it.
You know, I'm excited. So, I'm excited to mediate. Really, I am.
I just want to know, like, what are his thoughts on Iowa? Because I don't get the Iowa love. I just don't get it.
Did you see Bill Connelly has some Iowa love again?
Yeah, I read him this morning. The Mr. Former SB Nation guy, now ESPN Plus behind the paywall. We'll get into it next week.
Yeah.
But okay. Again, for all of you who, are also out there in the Deerwoods, I appreciate you. Good luck with your trail cameras. And I know I got a couple of interesting ones on cam already, but Luke, I think it's time to look at this defense, which was an abomination a year ago.
Okay. I think that we do need to take a look at where we were in 2020 and try to project where we're going in 2021. We really have to look at 2019. 2019's defense really made that season for them, right? Offensively, they had some struggles early in the non-conference. They even had some struggles defensively. But really, in 2019, they were able to be so good because they were pretty good defensively, and that was in large part due to the defensive coordinator change from Rob Smith to Joe Rossi, and that was Joe Rossi's first full year in 2019. But the reality of the situation is, again, you can use any excuse or whatever. They regressed last year pretty significantly, and a big part of that is personnel. I don't think there's any question about that. You cited, in some of our notes here, they had a significant drop even in just the statistical categories, right? And that's a huge, huge part of this.
It is. I think you look at, you mentioned 2019. The defense was bad early on. And I guess I shouldn't say bad. I'd say they're below average, but they gave up 35 points to Fresno, 32 points to Georgia Southern, 31 points to Purdue. And then it clicked for them. Mm-hmm. You look at the October, they allowed 17, 7, 7, and 10 to four Big Ten teams. Yes, the offense in those games also scored, 34 plus in all of them. But
right.
Last year it was difficult. I have spent a lot of time talking with Joe Rossi about it. It's been on Gopher Illustrated. We're doing the defensive previews here this week that are all free. Position by position, you can read Chad Wilt's thoughts in the D-line. You can read Joe Rossi's thoughts on the linebackers. You can read Joe Harris-Simiak and Paul Haynes' thoughts on the secondary. I don't think there's any better information than that out of the horse's mouth. So Joe Rossi has talked with me at length about how there was a lot of change that they didn't get a lot of a time to account for. Now, we've talked about this also at length on this podcast about how you lose Coughlin and Winfield and Barber and Martin and Sam Renner and all those guys. And then no one gets any time to figure out their new roles. Nobody gets any time because of COVID. And then they're awful. They're awful defensively there early on. But I think the question becomes, where are they right now? Because, it was bad early on. You give up 49 to a bad Michigan offense. You give up 45 to Maryland. But by the end of it, you did only give up 17 points to Nebraska.
Yeah.
And that's with a bunch of dudes on defense out with COVID. And then you only give up 20 in overtime to Wisconsin. So, Rossi has talked with me about how he thinks they turned a corner as more and more guys figured out their roles. Now, that's great. And I hope they have.
Yeah.
But, have they actually? Sure. I think we should kind of get into it position by position, because if they have, this team and the floor and ceiling of this team is raised immensely. But there's no denying, we talked about so much last year about how running back specifically in the run defense, they just obliterated Minnesota.
And it wasn't just, and it was both consistency in running, right? But it was also in huge, huge gains, right? They just got torched.
Explosive plays, or just between the tackles and between the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Running backs going into Nebraska, so the first five games of the year were averaging 8 yards a carry. That's horrible. That was worse than college football amongst FBS teams last year for a long time. Now I think it's going to be improved, and starts with that defensive line, Luke. But before we get to that, do you know who we're sponsored by again here for this episode?
We're sponsored by this group out of Indianapolis, Minnesota. They make They make licensed college t-shirts in a vintage style. They're home field. And I don't know, Ryan, if you paid attention to that, to their big Saturday release. They're releasing a new school every Saturday. But when Minnesota was released, did you notice how well they did?
I think they were like fifth all time.
They were fifth at the time. They were fifth all time. But maybe more importantly, I think that they were first in the Big Ten.
Yay, yay.
So here's what I have to say. Number one, we talked about my wife just had a baby, right? I can tell you with an absolute fact that she had that baby because they sent her some t-shirts and she wanted to wear them.
I would love to hear you have that conversation with your wife. I would love to hear what she says about that, but I can't blame her.
Here's the reality. She is wearing them now, and they are very comfortable. They're very soft, and the styles are awesome. Like, they're just amazing. So, if people want to go and get a shirt at home field, Ryan, there is a way that they can save money, right?
They can. They can use the promo code GOPHERGRIDIRON, aka the name of the podcast, but there's no space between Gopher and Gridiron, all one word, for 15% off your first purchase. I will also attest, I got some swag in the mail. We talked about it last week. We had my significant other on talking about it last week.
Yes.
She wasn't lying, by the way. I have yet to wear any of this. She has rotated all five pieces of apparel. She, like, once she gets off of the Zoom calls for the day, she goes and throws it on.
Mm-hmm.
She thinks it's incredibly comfortable. I got in some questions about, hey, what would you say for sizing? How does it run? Now, Luke, you're about 5'3".
Gosh. Yeah.
So I'm 6'4", 230. I got XLs. I'd say that's probably, I think lengthwise, I think you also, did you get large or XLs?
I got large. So I'm 6'2". I have a long torso. I'm 6'3", actually.
Stop. You're 6'2" on a good day. But
whatever. I think that they run a little bit smaller than usual, especially if you're concerned about shrinking. I would at least order up one size. I would probably suggest that.
Right.
But if you're one of those people that's religious about not drying your shirts, it's probably fine to go the size you are. But it's an athletic fit for sure.
Yeah. I would say, you know, XL, maybe it fits a little bit more comfortably if I only got a 2X. And then the women's size, I mean, there is no women's size. I think she got medium and she's 5'9". I think that was a good fit for her. So, I mean, the material is fantastic. The designs are some of the most unique vintage designs I've seen. I mean, if you're looking for some new Minnesota clothing, so stuff you haven't seen before, stuff you haven't seen at the tailgate, stuff you want to show off, it's pretty easy to just go to homefieldapparel.com, find some stuff, 15% off your first purchase with the promo code GOPHERGRIDIRON, Luke.
I know that that was the end of the ad, but I do have to just mention this. I gave the promo code in the hospital twice. I gave the promo code because I was wearing the shirt.
What?
Yeah, this nurse came up to me and goes, I really like your shirt, where did you get that? I said, you should go to homefield.com, use the promo code GOPHERGRIDIRON to get yourself a shirt. And he legit said thanks and like literally pulled out his phone. The other person, I'm not sure if they went right to the website, but yes, That is a legit fact.
That's fantastic. So if you don't believe us, you know, again, we can attest for it. Our better halves can attest for it. If you're looking for some new gear with football season and tailgate season coming upon us, they got some awesome designs. So homefieldapparel.com, promo code GOPHERGRIDIRON for 15% off your first purchase.
All right, man, let's start at defensive end when we talk a little bit about the defense. I am stoked, to be completely honest, about the overhaul that they've made on this defensive line with the depth that they have. You kind of got me jazzed a little while back when we talked about this. Obviously, the focal point here, you know, going into Big Ten Media Day is Boye Mafe. He's going to be featured there. He's, you know, you see him on projected draft boards, etc. I guess the question that I have for you, man, is he's got a high ceiling, but can he reach that ceiling?
I want to say yes, because if he does, I mean, it's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, I think Boye's ceiling in terms of just a pure edge rusher, I think it's the highest in the 10 years I've been on the beat. And that's no disrespect to Carter Coughlin, who I truly think doesn't get his due.
Also played out of position.
Well, that's my point, is I think Carter is a 3-4 outside linebacker, which is what he plays for the New York Giants now. Whereas I think Boye is a more traditional 4-3 edge rusher type. I mean, he's got the body type to be that. He is 6'4", 6'5", 250-something pounds, incredibly long, incredibly athletic. And he hadn't had, you know, a ton of experience coming out. I mean, again, I've told the story. I remember going to a Hopkins football game his senior year, and I watched Boye Mafe drop into coverage more than I did him rush the passer. And it's like, huh? What? And now he's, I mean, he has the ceiling to be one of the best edge rushers in the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. I think Boye certainly has a top 100 pick NFL ceiling. I think some people may be thinking to yourself, boy, Ryan, you must have had a lot of maroon and gold Kool-Aid this morning. I mean, no, I haven't, but Boye Mafe is going to destroy the combine. I mean, he has been on Bruce Feldman's freaks list, leads the team last year in sacks and tackle for loss. And I think the only thing that's really, I mean, he's got two places where he can improve. Number one, against the run. PJ Fleck talked about it last year. Joe Rossi talked about it last year. Chad Wilt talked about it with me here in the spring. And I think that's just more of a mentality thing where, yeah, he's going to give 100% in all the, you know, all the passing downs, but they need more of him on the normal downs, the first and tens, the second and sixes, the second and fours. They need more out of him to make more impact plays there. But he's got the, I mean, he could be, I mean, I think, I mean, all Big Ten, certainly. But the question is, can he reach that? And I think it kind of goes into the next question of he's going to need help, because if it's just Boye Mafe again, he's not going to surprise anyone this year. He needs help because or else it's going to be, there's going to be a tight end on his side and they're essentially, he's going to get chipped and then they're going to dedicate another guy to him. And then everybody else have one-on-one matchups. So the question becomes, I think Boye Mafe will lead the team in sacks and tackle for loss. And maybe that's a hot take. I'll ask House next week. But it's the big other big question to me is the guy on the other side is what are we going to get from Asezi Otemiwu in 2021? Because the man has started, I think now for 3 years or at least 2.5. And you look at the production and it's like, you know what I'm trying to say? Like
I think physically he looks the part, right? He's like one of the first guys you want off the bus.
Yeah.
But from
he's
a production
6'6", 280 and he's incredibly long. And I mean, he's what a Big Ten 5 technique should look like.
Yep.
But then we talk about the production. You mentioned it, like he's played in 33 games the last 3 years and he's got 51 tackles.
I think part of the question you have to ask yourself is like, what kind of statistical output do you want from someone from that position? And if you look at his stats historically, I think that it's underwhelming, right? Now, is he consistent? Debatable.
I mean, you even look at the most recent sample size that we have.
Yeah.
Like 2020, plays in 7 games, 15 tackles, 1 tackle for loss, and 1 sack.
Right.
You can't play in that many games and have that many snaps and be that just there's no productivity. Now, again, stats don't tell the whole story. But, I mean, give me a second here. I'm going to pull up the PFF grades for Asezi here the last few years.
Here's what I'll say about Asezi is, number one, like, off the bus looks great. The challenge is that I expected some sort of, like, improvement year over year, and that's the piece that just hasn't come. And the function is that the player, is that the coaching, right? I would argue that it's probably coming down to the player, but the coaching has a bit to do with it. We've just seen some guys produce a little bit better, like a Boye Mafe, even though they've had turnover at the defensive line position. You know, he's still been able to consistently kind of improve and get better year over year.
And so I look at what PFF has graded for Asezi, and I mean, he's performed better, but the pass rush grade is where it has been lacking for him in his 3 seasons. He's got, I think he's never been higher than 68. Last year had a 60 pass rush grade, which PFF says 60 is average. So he's been average, but like he's a 5th year guy now. Apparently he had 17 pressures. Let's see. He had 12 hurries last year, but only 1 sack. mean, you got, if you're going to get that close to the quarterback that many times, you just got to start converting.
Yes.
But the other thing is, like, yeah, we talk about, like, you know, it hasn't been great with the Sezzy. Well, who are you going to replace him with? And that's right. The thing where I think Minnesota's a year away, because, I mean, I look at the guys behind him. Like, you're looking at MJ Anderson, who I still don't know what MJ Anderson is. Is he a 5-tech? Is he a 3-tech? I think Minnesota would probably tell you he's probably more of a 3-tech that's going to play out of position here for a year, while they figure, because again, the 5-technique bodies behind him, I mean, Gage Keys was injured in the spring, or else I'd say it was him, and I don't think he'll be back until October. And then, I mean, we're also looking at guys like, I think Jod Joyner's a year away, and then it'll be Jalen Logan Redding, who played some last year. But we're talking about Jalen Logan Redding, Luke, who played 24 snaps. We're talking about MJ Anderson, who played 65. And then you have Asezi Otemiwu, who played 357.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are going to make a change from Asezi, which I don't anticipate Minnesota doing, or at least not in September and early October, is they need MJ and Jalen. Maybe Ja. Again, I know Ja was the spring game MVP. Trust me, I talked to Chad Wilt about that. You can read about it. But I know Chad Wilt and the rest of the defensive staff still believes, like, that was great from Ja. Like, they think he has a high ceiling, but they also think Jalen Logan Redding is ahead of him right now, both in terms of on-field productivity in the weight room, and that's obviously a good thing.
Yep.
But, like, we need to start to see some of that. So the question is, are we going to see Asezi still get 75-80% of the bulk snaps at 5-technique defensive end, or are we going to see that kind of shrink down to 60-ish, and then you rotate in more MJ Anderson, you rotate in more Jalen Logan Redding, Jod Joyner? I think that's the big question on my mind, because they need more out, especially in passing downs, because I think it says he can play well against the run. Mm-hmm. I think that's his strong suit, truthfully. But on those passing downs, why don't we just bring out Asezi and maybe put out Thomas Rush?
Yeah.
Or MJ Anderson, and kind of figure it out from there.
Yeah, for sure. I think the other thing that we have to be honest about is they need output from this defensive end position. I think we feel like, you know, defensive tackle is going to be one of the most improved, but they need production out of defensive end, because that's where they're going to be able to basically hide some deficiencies that they might have in the secondary, right? Being able to put pressure on the quarterback. So if you want to see the defense make a drastic improvement, I think where you're going to be able to see that happen has to be at the defensive line position. And to that point, we should just talk a little bit about defensive tackle too, before we move on to linebacker.
Well, I also want to make sure we don't skip over Thomas Rush, because
okay.
Chad Will loves Thomas Rush.
Dude, okay. Okay. Just to play devil's advocate here.
You haven't even heard my argument for him. I'm not even really a huge Thomas Rush stan, but
I'm not either.
I couldn't tell. Go ahead.
Let me just set this up. It's not that I don't think he can be successful. This is another instance where I'm more wondering, do we really need this Rush end that they keep trying to manufacture? Because they put somebody like a Carter Coughlin, maybe arguably playing out of position, probably one of your best defenders. He's now in the NFL, right? Is Thomas Rush a similar situation here? That's just my feeling of last season. But you give me
your argument is you think Thomas Rush is playing out of position.
I don't think that it was. Maybe I just don't buy the whole idea of the Rush end in general.
Look, Thomas Rush, incredibly inconsistent last year.
Yes.
I mean, and I also can explain it, because he switches from linebacker to rush end, and he gets 3 spring practices and then nothing until fall camp. And then by then, Chad Wilt's not going to teach him anything, because he's just got to get him ready for the season. And, you know, he played probably 35-40% of the snaps last year. And I agree. I mean, it wasn't, you know, incredible. I mean, I'm not making the argument for it. I mean, I look at Thomas Rush last year, and it looks like he played half the snaps, and Boye played, you know, it looks like it's about 55-45. And I think Boye is going to get more snaps, but I also think Thomas Rush is going to get more snaps. So you're thinking to yourself, Ryan, that doesn't make any sense. There's only so many snaps to go around. But the point I'm trying to make is, I think your pass rush down, when it's, second and long, third and long, is you're going to have Boya out there, but I think you take Asezi off. You put Thomas Rush on the field. You know, you take out your run stuffing one, and you say you go Val Martin and Niles Pinckney, who we'll get to. I mean, I think that's a very realistic scenario. And I also think that, you know, if you ask Chad Wilton, again, the coaches are always going to be higher on guys than we are in this podcast.
You have to be skeptical of what they say from time to time. And then I know you do a good job.
I certainly am. But it's like, I also get like Chad expects to see a second year jump from him at that position just because he's actually gotten time to work there. Yeah, he got thrown into the wolves and it wasn't great. But they also think he's among the twitchiest on the team. He's got, you know, he is 6'4". He is incredibly, you know, he can bend well, he can lean. And that's where, like, they expect Thomas Rush to be the starting RN in 22. But the question is, like, when he's out there this year, can Thomas Rush give this team more, you know, in the run game? Because he got obliterated last year. Mm-hmm. Can he get home, you know, when you're looking at pressures? Because Thomas Rush last year was actually second on the team in hurries. He was ahead of Boye Mafe in that.
Sure.
And he played less, you know, many more, less pass rushing. So, again, I'm not saying that Thomas Rush is going to be the next coming of whoever you want to pick for a rush end, mm-hmm. or just a pass rusher. I think the point I'm just trying to make here is I think he's going to be better because he's gotten time with Chad Wilt. He knows what he's doing now. He's gotten more time to hopefully develop something resembling a pass rush arsenal. And I think if you can put Thomas Rush, you know, out at the other defensive end spot on these pass rushing downs so that Boye Mafe doesn't have to do everything, I think Rush is going to be able to get home more than he was last year. I just think, again, I'm not saying Thomas Rush is going to be fantastic. I don't truthfully believe that. But I think he's going to be better. And I think that's the point I'm trying to make about just defensive end overall here, is I think they should be better. And if they are better, that helps Boye, because a rising tide lifts all ships. And so if Rush is better, or says he's better, MJ Anderson's better, and Jalen Logan Redding or Ja Joyner can provide them something, I think it'll certainly help.
I do think that someday we have to have a deeper discussion on this idea of Rush End, because
we're getting into the weeds if you want to talk. I mean, I can ask.
But my point. Okay, so my point.
My point
is this. Carter Coughlin, he's playing in the NFL right now, rightfully so, sure. Right? He, I think, statistically maybe didn't perform as much as he wanted. Now, and statistics don't always tell the whole story. I understand
that. I am going to punt you to the moon because I am not – go ahead. I'm bringing up Carter Coughlin stats.
No. I'm not saying he wasn't good. Like, I just think that ideally his position was not a rush end in a 4-3, right?
He couldn't play linebacker because it didn't process for him that far away from the line of scrimmage. Okay. You ask Mike Sherrills, you ask anybody, like, he had to move closer because, like, it just wasn't clicking for him. And right. So that's why, like, and again, the man ends his career at Minnesota in 4 years with 40 tackles for loss and 22 sacks and 8 forced fumbles. Like, I mean, did it always, and when he was injured for the, you know, that 2019 season, but like, I don't know.
Okay, again, fair enough.
Do I think Carter Coughlin, or and to bring it back home here to the 21 team, do I think Thomas Rush should be playing 50 snaps against Wisconsin and Iowa? AKA, do I think a 240-pound kid should be going against whatever they're throwing out at 310 pounds at left tackle? No. Like, take him out, put MJ Anderson or Gage Keys or one of these guys that are a little bit heavier. You know, put them out there, mm-hmm. to spell Boye if you need it. I think that's the point you're trying to make here, is like, I don't agree that like Carter Coughlin should see a ton of reps, or those, you know, the Thomas Rush types of the world should see a ton of reps against the Iowas and Wisconsins, because that's probably not going to help you win football games unless it's a passing down.
Sure. And that's maybe better articulated than the point I was trying to make in that, like, you know, if you're going to take that next step and you're going to try and win the West, right? You can't lose to the Iowas. You can't lose to the Wisconsins. And that's where specifically I feel like that rush end just gets obliterated. And then this is a function of.
Yeah. I mean, they have to adapt to that, knowing right. what the personnel right. would be. So, like, yeah, right. you're not going to play them more, hopefully, against the Wisconsins, the Iowas, the Northwesterns that are, not really passing teams compared to like Purdue and Nebraska types. Like, okay. I get that.
Yes. Yeah. All right. I'll get off that soapbox, but let's get to the rising tide. We do believe that defensive tackle should be significantly better. Big reason, right? You've got Micah Dutredway coming back. They bring in a Val Martin. They bring in a Niles Pinkley. Like, these are experienced guys. They're going to be able to rotate. We know they like to rotate, you know, but I think we feel a lot better this year against defensive tackle, which should help improve the run game, you know, from a defensive perspective. All in all, I think we have to feel better about defensive tackle going into fall camp.
This is the unit I'm projecting to be the most improved on defense. And I think that'll help the linebackers. And I think that'll help the secondary, certainly, because, I mean, you mention it. There were games last year where Minnesota had to play a bulk of snaps to freshman defensive linemen. I mean, Rashad Chaney and D'Angelo Carter, and you saw Logan Richter in there, Jalen Logan Redding. D.V. Harris, rest in peace, Dave. Oh, he's not dead. He's just not on the team anymore. Like, they had to give a ton of snaps at times to guys who weren't ready because of COVID and because of injuries and things like that. Well, that's not going to be the case here this year. Like, you bring in Val Martin and you bring in Niles Pinkney, I think, for a couple reasons. Number one, I think they want to see if there's another step that can be had for Micah Dutredway, because Micah Dutredway has not been pushed here in his time at Minnesota. He's just brought in as a transfer, immediately assumes the starting role because everybody else behind him is like 2-3 years younger. Well, you bring in Val, who's a fifth-year, sixth-year guy. You bring in Niles Pinkney, who's played over 1,200 snaps at Clemson. I think you saw a taste of what you can get out of him in the spring game. Obviously, he's an impactful player. So Micah's not going to play as much because they're going to not play it. All these guys as much, because the plan is they're going to rotate 5, maybe 6 defensive tackles. You will see Val Martin. You will see Niles Pinkney, Micah Dutredway, Rashad Chaney, D'Angelo Carter. And then I think against those Iowas and Northwesterns and Wisconsins, I think you'll see Logan Richter in there from Perham, who got his feet wet at times last fall. That's 6 defensive tackles. I can tell you the plan is Chad Wilt's going to rotate these guys for 25-ish snaps a game. So they don't have to be gassed all the time. You don't have to have Micah Dutredway out there for 70% of snaps.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to have D'Angelo Carter out there for 70% of snaps. If you can, you know, take their snaps down into the 45 to 50% chance, or not percent chance, percent of snaps per game, in theory, they should be fresher. In theory, if they're fresher, they're going to give you more. And if they're going to give you more, hopefully there's something resembling a pass rush. Hopefully there's something resembling holding the A and B gaps there on the inside. And hopefully that means an improved defensive line unit overall, which helps the linebackers have cleaner holes to run through, helps them diagnose easier, helps the secondary, because if they can get something, I mean, resembling a pass rush on the inside, because it was dreadful. I think they had like 1 sack out of the defensive tackle position last year. In 7 games, that can't happen. I mean, it just can't. And that's part of the reason why the defense dipped like they did. Now, I mentioned earlier, I think on pass rush downs, I think what Chad Wilt believes is Val Martin is probably their best interior pass rusher. So you'll see him out there. But I also think you're going to see Niles Pinkney get a shot. You're going to see D'Angelo Carter get a shot because, you know, if this was a whole stock market bit, I am still buying all the stock I can on D'Angelo Carter.
Okay.
I think he is going to be an all Big Ten guy by the time he leaves. And I think Chaney certainly has a ceiling there. But I just think short term and long term, we talked about this, I think, on a couple episodes ago, the defensive line overall, I'm buying in the short term and I'm buying in the long term with how well I think they've recruited there in recent classes. And I think you're starting to see that. And I think you'll start to see that here in 2021. But in theory, Luke, again, this all sounds great in theory and on paper, and you know what that's all about, is there's going to be guys that are more experienced, you know, but we're talking about a defensive line unit overall that says he's a fifth year. Boye is a fourth. You know, Mike is a seventh year senior. I mean, the dude can almost legitimately rent a car for better rates. And you got Val and Niles that are fifth, sixth year guys. And you have a ton of experience. You have you know, guys that are as old as it's going to get in college football. And in theory, that should help you in the West. So yes, I'm bullish on this defensive line position here for 2021.
All right, let's talk a little bit about some of the younger guys, though. Obviously, there were some high-profile recruits, especially locally. Like I think of like a Devon Eastern, right? But also, you got the gray shirt in Logan Richter. You know, what are we going to see out of guys like this, especially as we look into the future? Are they going to get some run into this experienced core?
I have a hard time believing it unless injuries happen. But I think there is a plan for someone like Logan Richter, 6'4", 340. I mean, if you throw him as the one tech, so essentially he's just going to sit there between the guard and the center and hopefully hold them up and allow everybody else to win their one-on-one matchups. You put him in there and take out Val Martin for a game or against the Wisconsins and the Iowas. And then, I mean, we talked about MJ Anderson. I think you'll see him at five tech and three technique. And then you got the young slew of guys like Jalen Logan Redding and Jod Joyner and, you know, Danny Strigow, Austin Booker, Devon Eastern, Jacob Schuster. I mean, there's a lot of guys that Minnesota won some important recruiting battles for. But now here's the beauty. You're in year five of a Big Ten program. You don't have to play them right away. Yeah. You can allow them to get a couple of years in the weight room before you throw them into the wolves. And that's where I think you're starting to see the depth build into this program from what they've done on defensive line recruiting.
Okay, I think we can easily say that we've covered defensive tackle and defensive line. I think for my money, this is the group that you got to see the most improvement on if you're going to expect to see improvement in this defense. And it's going to start with the run game, right? So maybe we transition, talk a little bit of linebacker. Assuming that defensive line is better, I think it's okay to think that linebacker should be better as well, right? Because the reality is the defensive line was not very good last year. You know, as much as people want to complain about the linebackers, there is some give and take there, right? You need good defensive line play to give linebackers opportunities, etc., right? And so it wasn't always great. They also are going to get like a Braylon Oliver back. He made a crushing hit in the spring game that reminded you, you know, the athleticism that's there and the tenacity that he plays with. But yeah, I think we just got to talk a little bit about linebacker. Am I wrong to think that, you know, improved defensive line play should help this group out?
I mean, yes, because if the defense can get pressure, if the defense can hold their gaps, if the defense can make sure that the guards and the tackles aren't immediately able to get up to the second level so that the linebackers are smothered immediately, helps everybody. I just think, like, as much as we talked about the rotations that are likely going to be coming on the defensive line, I think you're going to see the linebacker position rotate bodies as much as they have in the now 5 years that PJ Fleck's been here. Now, some of that's because they don't know, I mean, who's going to step up, but they also want to get a lot of guys reps to see how they respond. And that starts with two guys who weren't here or didn't play last year. That would be Abilene Christian transfer, Jack Gibbons, who looked the part in everything they had hoped for in the spring, and they're hopeful that I'm projecting him as a starter going into the fall. At Will or Mike, I don't know. But I think he is going to get snaps. Now, he doesn't have the sideline to sideline speed, but I'd say he's very instinctual because he's very experienced. He's seen 4 years of FCS football. He knows what he's reading. He knows what to do. And I think that's a good case for him to at least get the shot here in the non-conference and in the early part of the Big Ten schedule. The question becomes, well, you also have Braylon Oliver back from that knee injury. And it's funny to talk to Fleck and Rossi about him because they'll both tell you, like, that first couple of weeks of spring practice for Braylon, he was bad. He was bad because he didn't trust his knee. But you saw, and more importantly, and it culminated in the spring game, after every practice, you would see him trust that knee a little bit more and trust that knee a little bit more. And then he would, you know, not think about the knee as much and just think about playing the linebacker position. And you saw that culminate in the spring game, and I think it springboarded him into the summer here. But I'm going to say this, and I can hear the groans coming.
I'm ready.
I don't think Mariano Sori Marin's going anymore.
Was that not supposed to be that?
I think it's going to be a very important first 4 to 6 games for him. Because I mentioned Jack Gibbons. I mentioned Braylon Oliver. They still really like Cody Lindenberg. James Gordon played last year. You got Donald Willis there, Jaquandus Burns. there's bodies behind you that if you're not playing up to snuff, plus, I mean, you got Josh Ani who made the interception against Purdue to win it. Like, you're not performing, you're not going to play because there's too many other young bodies they need to see. So, like, game one, I think you'll see, like, Jack Gibbons and Mariano out there. But this is the point I'm trying to make is, like, say on passing downs, you take out Mariano, and you take out Jack Gibbons and Mariano, and you put on Cody Lindenberg and Braylon Oliver, two better blitzers, I think, between the two of them. Or, you know, say, you know, if you're going to drop a guy into coverage, well, you take out Mariano, and say you put in, like, Josh Ani or someone. Mm-hmm. But to your point about, like, run defense, like, I look at the run defense grades, and I look at the two worst, according to PFF, they were James Gordon and Donald Willis. And then it wasn't much better for guys like Cody Lindenberg and Mariano Sorry-Marin. Like, the linebackers overall were graded horribly against the run. They were all below average to incredibly mediocre. And I think if the defensive line can help them in front in terms of maintaining their gaps, getting pressure, different things like that, that'll, as we talked about, a rising tide lifts all boats. And that's where, again, Mariano's not going anywhere. I know some people are very upset about that, but I just think, like, you and I don't think the world of Mariano Sorry-Marin, do we?
Well, let's noodle on that just a little bit. Like, did he have struggles? Yes. How much of that was exacerbated by the fact that his coach played him up so much, right? And then he wasn't able to perform.
The quote directly, I think verbatim, was his expectations were for him to be one of the better linebackers in the Big Ten. And I think everybody then took that and ran with it and said that, you know, they said, you know, Rossi said Mariano was going to be Dick Butkus.
I don't think that. I think I still have reasonable expectations, right? So for me, is like you're one of the better linebackers in the Big Ten. So that's got to put you in the top half, right? And so if we were to go like PFF, he's not in the top half. And if you're really saying one of the better, he's got to be in the top, you know, he's got to be in the top quarter probably. He's definitely not in the top quarter.
He was probably, to give him, you know, I mean, to not just gaslight the poor kid.
I'm not trying to gaslight him. I think he was one of the best tacklers
on the defense last year. It's just like everywhere else, like pass rush, coverage, overall run defense, it wasn't good.
Sure.
And that's where he didn't have Kamal Martin and he didn't have Thomas Barber. You know, you couldn't just rotate him in. He was playing 400 something snaps a game.
Well, you also didn't have Antoine Winfield Jr. who cleans up all messes. But the point being is that I think that Rossi was, you know, Rossi saying and putting that out there, you know, didn't do Mariano Sorry-Marin any favors. Couple that with the fact that, you know, defensive line was a struggle. The run game just completely got obliterated. Like, that just didn't look good.
Well, then again, the point I'm trying to make here is, yeah, Gibbons and Sorry-Marin, I'd say they're my projected starters for Ohio State. And then you'll mix in guys like Oliver and Ani and Lindenberg. But I think where this an improved linebacker unit will also help is on special teams. Like, I think, you know, for the guys who aren't getting the bulk of the snaps on defense, so say James Gordon and Donald Willis and, you know, Lucas Finneysey and Jaquandus Burns, I mean, go throw them out there and kick off and punt coverage and have them, you know, I mean, that's where you think about all the good linebackers recently in Minnesota, like Thomas Barber and Kamal Martin, Blake Cashman, fantastic special teams players. You want to earn it early in your career and want to earn defensive reps? I mean, I even think of Antoine Winfield. He was really good on special teams. Mm-hmm. Go make plays on special teams, and I can assure you, Rob Wenger's not going to, and everybody else will see that, and you'll probably end up earning some defensive reps here before the time is over. But I think the point I'm just trying to make here is you're going to see rotation depending on the time, the down, the situation, the team. Because there's no denying that, you know, say when Minnesota goes and plays Colorado, it's going to look a little different at linebacker than it will when they play Wisconsin and Iowa because they're different offenses. And they're Rossi, in theory, from what he's told me, is going to kind of tune whatever the linebacker he's giving reps to that game, to whatever their strengths are, to what he can hopefully try to expose the opposing offense with. So we'll see how it all kind of works out. But I mean, I just can't see a scenario where they're any worse than last year. But I mean, we are talking about a Gopher football team here.
Yeah. So, I mean, they have to be better if this team is going to improve. And, you know, their improvement likely could determine a lot with this 2021 season outcome, right? That's probably one of the biggest factors and one of the biggest places they need to improve, because we feel confident defensive line. They've made some improvements there. Still need to see it in reality, but we feel good, at least on paper. Okay, let's get to where I feel maybe even more concerned than linebacker would be in the secondary, specifically. It's kind of the whole thing. Obviously, it's going to be hard to replace a guy like Benjamin St. Juice. Third round pick goes to the Washington football team. You do get Coney Durback, right? But basically from there, it's really a big question mark, right? We've talked about this before in previous episodes, but you know, Terrell Smith made a jump, but it's a big question mark beyond Coney Durr.
I'm going to miss St. Juice. I mean, it's funny because you look at the two transfers that Fleck brought in. You brought in St. Juice and you brought in Chris Williamson. And
ironically, on that, he didn't want to take transfers, but that's been his best recipe for defensive back so far.
And that's my point. Is it's funny because you know he brings the guys that those quote unquote helmet schools didn't want, and he ends up developing them into both NFL draft picks. Well, he doesn't have any secondary transfers this year, when that's where it's like they tried but they didn't get any. And I mean, I just don't know what to expect, because Coney Durr is going to be playing every single snap. He led the team in defensive snaps last year. He's going to do that here again this year. But is it finally tea time? And I don't know. I mean, the spring was promising, and that's where he's got all the physical tools to be an NFL guy. He is 6'1" long, and he's one of the fastest kids on the team. I mean, you saw in Georgia, he was running in high school 10.6, 100 meters. I mean, the dude can flat out fly. But I look at his coverage grade, and it's been freaking awful the last 20 games. And I believe it. I mean, the only time last year where he got meaningful reps was against Maryland, and he allowed 6 receptions on 6 targets. Now, was the spring game promising that Paul Haynes maybe has had the light come on for him? Boy, I hope so, because if he can solve what is projecting to potentially be a revolving door at outside corner, like if Terrell Smith can be the one that gets 70% of the snaps there and actually looks serviceable, it solves a lot of things. Because if it's not tea time and he just continues to kind of play at that below average level that we've seen him play at the last 2 years, well, you're going to see Phil Howard. I mean, you're going to see Miles Fleming. You're going to see Justin Wally, Jalen Glaze. And you're going to it's going to be, well, here you go, freshman. Or here you go, six-year guy that hasn't been able to really, make a meaningful impact at times. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to expect. I mean, I think Justice Harris will get a bulk of the snaps in nickel. But I can tell you, Justice Harris, if he doesn't perform up to snuff in pass coverage, he's going to be off the field in pass coverage, because you can't have an absolute liability guy in the slot in this league. I mean, I look at game one and I look at two. I mean, Ohio State's wide receivers are absolutely stupid this year.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to have two guys that are maybe first round picks in this upcoming NFL draft. And then I'm sure the rest of the guys in that room will also be NFL guys. It's just like, I don't want to see Justice Harris in the slot against whatever Ohio State's throwing out there. I just don't.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think at corner here, I hope it's tea time. Is there optimism behind the scenes that it's tea time? Sure. But I don't think Ohio State's a reasonable first test for tea time. Because now if it is, the light bulb came on for him. I think you got to give it 4-6 games to figure it out. And I'd rather Minnesota figure it out by giving tee time the bulk of the snaps than someone like Phillip Howard, because tee time's a year 4 guy. And if it clicks for him, he could come back for another year or two.
Mm-hmm.
Phillip Howard, it can't. And I just don't know what the ceiling is there. And if it's not tee time, I would rather see Jalen Glaze and Justin Wally and, a guy like Miles Fleming to get their shot. So I think it just ultimately boils down to, what do you think what do you think of, you know, Terrell Smith? Because I know some people are like, well, why haven't you brought up Steven Ortiz yet? Steven Ortiz is going to be a nickel guy. And if it's not Justice Harris, I think it'll be Saul Brown. I think it'll be maybe Bishop McDonald that they just put on scholarship. You know, maybe that changes in 22 when Bishop's gone and Justice is gone and then Ortiz will get his shot. But I don't know what to expect at corner. And that's where we talked about earlier. If they can get a pass rush and these guys only have to cover for 3 seconds instead of 5.5,
right?
Boy, does that change things. But yeah, until that becomes the reality, I mean, you're certainly going to have question marks at corner here.
I think the thing that we have to keep in mind when people are basically, you know, raising the, like, why aren't we playing the 4-star, you know, recruit that came in, especially at corner, is corner is a difficult transition at every level, right? Transitioning from high school to college is difficult, and then obviously college to the pros. It's not like first year guys or freshmen come in every year and just light the world on fire. They often need time. You know, the schemes are more complicated. Obviously the guys are much more athletic, you know, universally. You might occasionally get one guy that's a burner or, you know, a complete route runner in high school, but it's not that you get almost everybody right in the college level. So I think we got to temper those expectations. And I do like, your comment about Philip Howard. If memory serves, he did opt into the transfer portal, right? So they sold him on something to end up coming back. And I'm curious to see how he's going to fit.
Well, the interesting part is, and I'll have this out later this week, is again, for those, I mean, I asked Paul Haynes about it. I go, what do you think is realistic? Like, what do you think happens at that outside corner spot? And once again, just like every other defensive coach has talked about, we talked about rotations. Now, at corner, like, say T-Time gets hot out there and he's defending well, well, yeah, then you don't need to rotate him. But if it ain't the bee's knees out there, you're going to have to rotate guys. So the question becomes, I mean, are you rotating 3 corners outside of Coney, 20 snaps a game? So say T-Time and Philip Howard and Jalen Glaze. I mean, you're just going to give them each 2 series or 3 series a game and see how they do? Or how are they going to divvy that? I mean, that's going to be one of the big questions I have, because, again, Paul Haynes made it incredibly clear to me, and you'll be able to read his words here again, I think, Thursday and Friday, is rotation is going to be a thing at corner. I just don't know what to expect there, because I think it is more of a hot hand approach from that.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk a little bit of safety here. Newbin, Howden, both returning starters. We talked a lot previously in other episodes. This was a challenge because they swapped spots from where they played in 2019. Obviously, losing Antoine Winfield Jr. Was a big loss for them. We thought Howden regressed after he was arguably one of the most improved players in 2019, and now makes a position switch, pandemic, etc. Right, but we feel very confident that Joe Harry Simiak's the right guy. He's the right coach. It's now a function of, okay, how do we get production out of these guys? How do we make sure that, you know, we're only giving up, you know, 14 or 15 yard runs instead of 65 yard runs against Maryland, right? So we've talked about this recently, but you know, what are we expecting here at safety?
We're going to find out if Joe Harris Simiak is as good as everybody thinks.
Yeah, because, that's a good point.
Again, we don't have any real reason to suggest outside of that, you know, the play last year that he's not. I mean, he was the FCS coach of the year 2 years ago. He was here in the offseason, the runner up to, you know, two Minnesota defensive backs coaches are the final two for the Buffalo job, where Mo Lindquist ends up getting it over Harris Simiak. Obviously, everybody in the college world thinks Joe Harris Simiak is going to be a future Power Five head coach. Well, I'd love for him to have that second year jump for both Newbin and Howden. I say second year jump because it's their second year at their respective positions. And that's where I talked to Joe Harris Simiak about. Howden stunk and Newbin wasn't great. So, like, what happened? And I mean, he was very honest about it, mm-hmm. where both of them were playing different safety spots than what they had played in 2019. So I think that if I have it right, I believe Newbin went, or excuse me, Howden went from strong to free because he filled in for what Winfield vacated. And then the flip for the flip side of things, that's where Newbin went. He went from free to strong. So both of them, it was year one at different safety positions than they had been accustomed to before. And then COVID hit and they didn't get any time to learn their new positions because the way I understand it, very different responsibilities from strong to free and free to strong. And you saw them struggle. And now both have had an entire offseason after being thrown to the wolves with Joe Harris-Simiak to learn what the expectations are from him, from Joe Rossi. And if they're not the answer, that's where I think Flip Dixon can come in. And I still think it sucks that he got hurt in spring. The expectations are that he should be ready to go here in a few weeks coming off a shoulder deal. But you'll also have Calvin Swenson there. And then I think we'll see Darius Green as a true freshman play four games on special teams and be an absolute – I mean, he is just a heat-seeking missile, at least on tape. And I think that'll play on kickoff, and I think that'll play on punt. But that's the reason for optimism is that – I mean, here's – you want to know the hottest take if people have listened at this point. You know what the hottest take probably is behind the scenes still? Is that Newbin and Howden have NFL ceilings. Now, did they play like that last year?
No.
No. No one's saying that they did, but they have NFL bodies.
Sure.
And you've seen them play well. And they're going to test well, but we need to see the consistency. You don't want to see Flip Dixon mix in with you, Tyler Newbin? Well, you better play a lot more consistent. You better tackle better in the box. You better have better, better things in coverage. So, again, I think it should be better, but the question is how much. And if it's in, like if we're talking about the safety position last year, I'd say it was below average to mediocre. Well, if they're going to be above average to good this year, then yeah, throw all the money at Joe Harris-Simiak and try to get him to stay. I don't know that it'll do anything because I think he's going to potentially take a head coaching job and. Somewhere in FBS football next year. But if they play that well, then yeah, great. Joe Harris-Simiak got them where they need to be. And, Minnesota's going to have two pretty good safeties to count on where a lot of other things are going to be just very different, I would say, in 2022. So, I mean, the question becomes, Luke, what's realistic for expectations for the safeties?
Yeah.
I mean, is it going to be bad? Is it going to be good? Somewhere in between. I think you and I would both bet they're going to be somewhere in between. But there, I mean, you can explain why they were bad last year.
Mm-hmm.
But if that continues here through the first half of the season again, I mean, change is going to have to be made with personnel. And that's where you'd be looking at Flip Dixon and Calvin Swenson and, say, Darius Green.
Okay, maybe we should talk a little bit about expectations for this defense going forward into 2021. I think that if we use the barometer of 2020, would you say improved or not nearly as improved as 2020 or more or less the same?
I mean, I we've talked about it. I think they'll be better. I just don't know how much better because if you tell me you're going to see, let's see. I think SP Plus last year had them 64th defensively, which I think from the amount of teams that actually played last year, below average. 2019, they were 26th overall defensively, which is good. So, I mean, I think above average should be the expectation. Now, if they perform below that, Minnesota's not going to win as many football games. If they perform above that, Minnesota, I think, has a 2019 ceiling to them. Because I think the offense should be pretty damn good.
Yeah. I think it's important to clarify when you say ceiling, you think that's the best they can do relative
to Do I to think like, they could be a good defense? And a good defense to me is like a top 30 defense in FBS or in Power 5. I think so. I mean, I think it depends if you think Boye still has a ceiling. If it says he can get, if they can get anything from that other defensive end spot in terms of productivity, if they can get anything from the, from the defensive tackles, are they going to be, if the defensive line is as good as I think they will be, and I think they should be a good unit overall, that's going to lift the linebackers and that's going to lift the secondary. Because I think the offense is going to perform well enough that they're going to be scoring 28, 31 points a game. that should win you football games. Mm-hmm. But the question is, in overall, and we're kind of getting into like, there's going to be a lot of close games on the schedule this year. Like, there's more toss-up games than, you know, you look at Colorado, you look at, you know, Nebraska and Maryland, Northwestern, and then Indiana per se. I mean, those games are the difference to me between 6-6 and, you know, say 10-2.
I think that you're right. I think you're underselling Indiana. I think Indiana is going to be really good again.
I'm not underselling them. I would say, I don't know. I think we'll get into it next week with House, but I just think there's going to be a lot of close games in the schedule. There's not a ton of games on the schedule. You're like, okay, Minnesota should lose that by 10 or Minnesota should win that by 14.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot in between, like the Northwesterns and the Indianas, the Marylands, the Nebraskas, you know, the Colorados of the world. Like, yeah, you win close games, you're going to be sitting pretty well in the West going into those final three games of Indiana, Iowa, and Wisconsin. If you don't, it's going to be, well, what are we doing here in year five with PJ Fleck? So, I think this is, you know, I've seen the projections where people think 6-6, 7-5. I mean, it all comes down to how they perform in close games. I mean, personally, I think I'm an 8-4 right now for this team, but is there a 10-2 ceiling? I mean, if you think Minnesota can finally win in Kinnick Stadium, and or if you think Minnesota wins in Bloomington, you think they can pull it out on the road in Colorado.
Yeah.
I mean, the road games this year are going to determine that, because you're Boulder, you're Evanston, you're Iowa City, Bloomington, West Lafayette to an extent. But again, I think expectations for the defense should be raised. I think they will be better, but I just don't know how much better. And that's something that's going to be determined here as we continue to go along, as they continue to figure out with all the rotating that we've talked about on defense. At some point, I think the rotations are going to become more solidified and you're not going to be rotating as many people. But how long does it take them to get to that point, and what is the end result for that defense because of it?
Yeah, you brought up a good question. What are they going to be in terms of like a nationally ranked S&P plus, right? And could they get into the top 30? Now, I'm taking this relative to the best defense that they had in the PJ Fleck era, which was 2019, right?
Right.
That team had a number of guys where you go, he could be a pro, 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 right?
Sure.
And they are now, right? I look at this defense and I ask myself, outside of Boye, who can be a pro on this defense? I know you said this, there's a ceiling for Howden or Newbin. I don't buy that, but I don't do this for a living, right?
I think you'd be talking about guys like Niles Pinckney. Like there was NFL talk about him going into last year, and it didn't formalize for him.
Sure.
Does it come to fruition for him?
Sure.
I think there's a ceiling with D'Angelo Carter still. At linebacker, pass for now. And then again, I think the secondary, that's where, if it clicks, again, I think Coney could have an NFL ceiling. I think if Terrell Smith has the light turn on, he's certainly got one.
Sure. But things got to go right. Right. They got to go right.
I mean, a lot has to go right there. But like, I'm looking at ESPN's FPI for this 21 team. They're projecting Minnesota at 6-6. They have Minnesota projected to be the favorite in like five games. And that's where I'm like, I don't understand that. And again, I'm sure a lot of it has to do with Minnesota defensively. But
yes,
we're going to find out, is Joe Rossi as good as we think he is? Mm-hmm. Are we going to find out, is Chad Wilt and Joe Harris-Simiak as good as we think they are? Yeah. And if they don't perform well, I mean, I think there'll be changes, both personnel with players and coaches. But I don't project that, because I just think they have the bodies that are old. I mean, we're talking third, fourth, yes, fifth, sixth-year guys.
If it's not now, it's when, right? Because it may be never. So that's why you're talking about personnel changes.
Yes,
because
it's got to be now. There's going to be a lot of close games for this team. And I think defensively will determine how many of those Minnesota win. Now, yes, offensively, we also can get into the discussion of trestle ball and how much we hate it. But I think, again, can Minnesota play well enough defensively in those final three games of the year where you're going to be going against some tough defenses? Iowa's defense is going to be really dang good. Indiana's defense is going to be pretty good, and Wisconsin's defense is really good. Like, your offense is going to need help to stay in those games.
Mm-hmm.
And the nice part is that Joe Rossi's got 9 games to figure out who's my best personnel so that we can be humming going into November, and that Minnesota can have a shot to hopefully be competing in the West and have a very interesting final three games.
All right, so let's get an ad read in here for home field one more time. Again, they brought to you both the offense and defensive preview this year. Want to thank them for partnering with us in the previews this year. Obviously, we've talked about how great the apparel is. Check that out, homefieldapparel.com. Go for Gridiron to save 15% if it's your first order. Additionally, if you don't, they have more apparel than just Gopher stuff. So if you happen to have a team in the SEC or you happen to have a team in the Big 12 or whatever, right, you might be able to find them there. Just know that the Gopher stuff is legit. And if you're listening to this podcast, you probably want Gopher stuff. So I can't endorse it highly enough. It's been awesome to wear. I've hardly taken mine off. Ryan has hardly worn his for reasons that you should listen to in the episode that preceded this one. So check that out again, homefieldapparel.com, Gopher Gridiron, to save 15%. Ryan, before we go, mm-hmm. we do have to do a very brief, very quick special teams preview. No. I know this is difficult.
I refuse.
But I have to know. If you have to pick a special
teams MVP. We don't know
MVP.
Anything.
No, I need you to answer the questions.
Matthew Trickett.
Okay. Fine.
It has to be. Well, because, I mean, we just talked about it at length.
You didn't even let me answer the question. Let me ask the question.
I don't need a question because I already know what I'm going to give for an answer.
Okay. Who is going to lead the team in special team tackles? I don't even have a question. I know that off the top of my head. That's how much I am an elite.
James Gordon, I would
team.
Say.
No, what man, Preston Jelen.
The OG Preston Jelen. Yeah. Again, I don't know what to tell. I don't know what to tell people about special teams this year. Like, on paper, it should be better. They got the MAC kicker of the year coming in, Matthew Trickett, and well, you'd hope the Australian performs better because he's not going to be battling COVID and learning how to kick in American football. And
let's back up right there on kicking. Let's be a little bit clear in that Emmett Carpenter, was he not the Big Ten kicker of the year?
I mean, I think he was.
I'm pretty sure he was the Big Ten kicker of the year. He regressed a little bit in his next 2 years. Not saying he was a bad kicker. He was a very good kicker. But I wouldn't say that it's going to be absolutely up. It should be up. I shouldn't say that, but don't expect him to be like, doesn't miss a field goal all season. Don't have those expectations.
Yeah. I mean, Matthew Trickett hasn't missed an extra point in what be 3 years. Like, Matthew Trickett has made 11 field goals of 40 plus yards. Minnesota hasn't made one, and it's going to be over 1,000 days. Minnesota's going to play in a lot of close games. And you look at the kicking situation last year, it played a part of the reason Minnesota went 3-4 instead of 5-2. Like, if Matthew Trickett can make some clutch kicks in the fourth quarter and in overtime, then yeah, Minnesota's got a chance in the West. But if Rob Wenger doesn't figure out how to make a kicker actually kick,
yeah,
whether it's Matthew Trickett or Will Mobley, the Temple transfer that they're bringing in, or what they have in-house, like, well, what are we discussing? Or if their punting game remains dead last in the Big Ten, and like, you're not going to help your defense at all, and that's not going to help you win football games. Or if your return game continues to be an absolute dumpster fire, like, people want to know who's going to be returning. I mean, I saw 45 minutes of spring practice. Like, and the other funny part is, I won't name who, but I was talking with a couple of position coaches on the staff, and it came up, the punt return game, and they kind of looked at me like, what do you want us to do when we're just punt safe the whole freaking time? Like, yeah, you want to complain to us about the punt return game? You're preaching to the choir if we're just going to be punt safe the whole time. That don't help anybody.
Right.
So I think, again, what are reasonable expectations for special teams? I can assure you on, I think Thursday is when we get Fleck. I'm going to ask him that. Like, what are realistic expectations for the kicking and return game? Because, PJ, it ain't been the bee's knees anytime here soon. Like, then, like, that stuff needs to improve here, man. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm sure he'll tell me, you know, we brought in Matthew Trickett and Will Mobley to shore things up. We're expecting Mark Crawford to take a step in the punting game. That's great. But, like, we need to see it actually come to fruition here in the kicking game and in the return game. So, I don't know what to tell you, folks. I mean, it's going to be an interesting as the world revolves with Rob Wenger and special teams. Again, everybody knows my thoughts and opinions there. So we'll see. I mean, on paper, Luke, they should be an above average unit because I think Matthew Trickett will raise the level of them. Mm-hmm. But if Mark Crawford still can't kick a football and the Louisiana transfer they brought in still can't punt a football, you know you've got something in Dragan Kesic in the kickoff game. But, like, can Minnesota return it? Or is Cam Wiley just going to cost the team 10 yards of field position every time he returns it?
Right.
Like, I know we joke about it, but losing 11 yards of field position per Cam Wiley return, a.k.a. the difference between starting at your own 14 and 25, that's massive. Absolutely gigantic. Gargantuan. I mean, I'm running out of expletives to it just has to get better. And I hope Rob Wenger in year five, in the year of our Christian Lord 2021, figures this stuff out. And I'm guessing next week we can talk the house about it because I'm sure he's much more level-headed than he is.
All right.
Than I am about all this.
I only have one more question for you.
Yeah.
How many tank tops you bring into Big Ten Media Day?
I'll be rocking. I'm going to rock the GI Polo.
Oh, man. You rock that.
And I'm going to
so
see
hard.
If I can't make it on BTN and people can see this face that was meant for radio for a reason. And we'll go from there. You know, so it should be a good time getting some getting a meal with Guardsy and Grimmer. You know, it's getting close to football. And as I said, 44 days until the Gophers take on Ohio State at what I assume is going to be a packed TCF Bank Stadium. And I hope that people will be there beforehand. Sipping on some drinks at the GLC tailgate before.
For sure.
But we can get into that here next week.
Yeah, so I want to thank everybody for listening. Again, want to thank Home Field Apparel for sponsoring us for these two preview episodes for the offense, defense, and special teams. Again, thank you for listening, and go Gophers.